This is a CBC podcast.
Hi there, it's Pia, and every Wednesday, we're bringing you a bonus podcast, one handpicked story from the week's round of the Sunday magazine that we think is definitely worth hearing or hearing again. Of course, you can hear all of our stories on the full podcast that we put out on Sunday and on the CBC Listen app. All right, here's this week's highlight. Okay, so slang, especially online slang, can appear and disappear very quickly nowadays. For example, remember chuggy? That term was all the rage just a few years ago. But if you never found out that chuggy means trying too hard, do not worry, because apparently chuggy is already out of style. Something special seems to be happening this summer, however, with internet slang. It is transcending TikTok and entering the political arena with some potentially lasting real-world consequences. So, for our latest installment of Word Processing, our ongoing look at language, we're exploring what that means and what it might have to say about the way online language changes and changes our world. Adam Alexic is a linguist known to his followers online as the etymology nerd. Adam, hi.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I did some verification of the word chuggy and to see how out of style it really is. I asked my teenager and she's like, it is so out of style. Do you still say chuggy?
No, I don't think anybody who's young actually says chuggy or really ever did say it. It kind of was occupied a unique moment where it had a brief flash in the pan instance in 2021. And then all these news articles like BuzzFeed and whatever were reporting on how younger people were saying chuggy before the word actually really took off. And then it started seeming kind of like alienating to the younger people. So we didn't actually end up saying chuggy at all. Like the word never took off because it seemed too forced.
I feel that happened a bit with Riz. And I am embarrassed to say I was one of those older people who were like, the kids are saying Riz.
Well, that's how slang works, that when the older people start saying it, then it dies off. But with chuggy, I think it never had the initial part of the lifespan. It just like fast forwarded to the old people saying it because it kind of turned into like millennials asking themselves whether they were chuggy. And then the word really never had potential among Gen Z in the first place.
Okay, old people, to you, what is that? Is that a millennial?
Well, in diffusion of information theory, which is like how memes and ideas spread across cultures, and this works very well with words, words always start with like a very small subset of the population, the innovator class, and then they move to the early adopters. So this would in this case be like Gen Z or so, and then the late adopters, maybe millennials. And by the time boomers are saying things like Riz, you no longer want to say Riz because it seems a little forced.
Okay, I'm glad you left out us Gen Xers and denigrating the various generations.
No denigration, just trying to describe it.
Fair enough. So you describe yourself as the etymology nerd, and I just want to get your qualifications today as an expert on online slang. You have a degree in Harvard in linguistics. You're also a member of Generation Z, and I'm saying Z as opposed to Z since you're an American. But that
Thank
aside.
Thank you for accommodating.
Yes. So I guess Gen Z and Harvard, I'm going to assume this makes you both youthful, smart, and cool and in the know. Yes?
Thank you. I'll take it.
Fair enough. Okay. I want to talk about this big word this summer. I think a lot of people have probably heard this word, at least previous to the summer. Brat. This is apparently the word of summer 2024. It's known as Brat Summer. If you're listening to us right now and you have no idea what I'm referring to, take a listen to this.
You think you just fell out of a coconut tree?
Big Sister General.
So that is just one of the many, many online clips combining Kamala Harris's words with music from singer Charlie XCX's latest album, which is called Brat. For what it's worth, Merriam-Webster defines brat as disparaging or an ill-mannered person. So how has that word evolved into how people are using it this summer?
Yeah, well, brat has a really interesting kind of path here. So it started with this meaning of spoiled child. Then it kind of took a turn into BDSM slang for like
a woman who talks back, and then that turned into like kind of a more empowered, reclaimed term for a strong-headed, disobedient woman, and that's kind of like the vibe that Charlie XCX was going for. But over this summer, Brat has continued to be dissociated from even that context and is now used just as an essence of this summer. So it's connecting Kamala Harris to the color lime green, to Charlie XCX's music. So it's this broad kind of theme that people have adopted as like the label for the summer.
Okay, and we're not saying using it as a noun. We're saying things like you're brat or no, that's
it's an
brat.
Adjective, yeah. Yeah, it used to be a noun and it shifted parts of speech.
How did this word become closely linked to Kamala Harris?
It's the way that all political campaigns from now on are going to be run through memes. It's the most effective way to target younger audiences. It feels the most authentic. And when Kamala Harris first started gaining more recognition, as it became likely that Joe Biden was going to drop out, we saw all these kind of remixes of her coconut tree quote, often themed to something that was already trending. So in this case, that was Charlie XCX's Brat album. And the way social media works is that when you put something to trending music, it makes it even more likely to go viral. So they hopped onto an already trending meme for maximum kind of lift. And what's also interesting about this is that Brat didn't seem forced. It wasn't her own campaign doing it. It's people who aren't on her campaign, who are just excited about it, who have done most of these edits. And that's why it feels authentic in a way that Chugi never did.
And Charlie XCX herself tweeted, Kamala is brat. So that helped out.
Totally. The endorsement that we weren't expecting, but it definitely did help.
All right. First of all, I don't know. Do we need to explain what a meme is to people? You want to quickly do that?
Yeah, the idea of a meme traces back to 1971. There's a book called The Selfish Gene by Richard Dawkins, and he defines it as like a self-replicating unit of culture. But memes have been around in some form forever. We think of them as these online images or videos that are just kind of funny and easily shared. But really, a meme is an idea that travels and it carries a unit of culture. In this case, the unit of culture is this idea of Brat, this essence of the summer. And Kamala Harris herself.
Okay, I want to pick up more about this Kamala Harris stuff because you kind of explained what brat means this year. And then like Charlie XCX went on to explain.
You're just like that girl who is a little messy and likes to party and like maybe says some like dumb things sometimes, who like feels herself, but then also like maybe has a breakdown, but kind of like parties through it. It's very honest, it's very blunt, a little bit volatile. Yeah, like does like dumb things, but like it's brat, you're brat. That's brat.
Yeah, obviously Kamala Harris is not that, right?
Yeah, the definition of brat doesn't really seem to align with Kamala Harris. Make this make sense.
Well, that's partially what makes it funny, but it's also partially that brat doesn't really have as much of a set definition. It's sort of a moving target that people have adapted as a label to anything where it makes sense. So there's nothing necessarily brat about a coconut tree or the color lime green or... But it's all connected through this overarching theme that the memes have kind of built into the same sphere. So Kamala is not a messy woman, right? Kamala is, I think, a very well put together woman. But it's funny, which is why it works as a meme to like connect her to this kind of absurd, ironic meme genre that we've created. But it's also something a little bit deeper, I think, that Brat speaks to a genuine kind of zeitgeist that we're going through right now.
We're in August. Are we going to be talking about brat as the word of summer in September when it's still summer?
It's kind of done pretty well for this summer that I think it definitely will be like the defining word. Sometimes we have been good at labeling summers. So we had the summer of love in 1967. We had hot girl summer in 2021. And now it's brat summer. Sometimes the efforts seem more corporate and they'd catch on less. So these seem more authentic and they caught on because they really did work as that label that really captured the feeling of the summer.
I was shopping the other day and there was a number of stores who had shirts and hoodies that said hot girl summer on. Guess what? They run fire sale because no one of the age that would wear these would wear that anymore. Cruel summer as well on fire sale.
Right.
Okay, let's get to another word that's been everywhere, at least the last couple of weeks. Kamala Harris just announced her VP pick, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, a few days ago.
Right.
Walz is famous for a linguistic trend himself. He's the guy who started calling Republicans, quote, weird.
Well, it's true. These guys are just weird.
That stuff is weird. They come across weird. They seem obsessed with this.
These guys are creepy and, yes, just weird as hell. That's what you see. That's what you see.
Like, weird. I've been calling people weird for 30 years. Like, right. What's your sense of how this word blew up in recent days?
Sure. Well, unlike Brett, he's not using weird in a linguistically new way. Right. This is no new definition. It's been an adjective. Brett hasn't been an adjective. But what he is doing is he's very good at branding. The whole, like, kind of campaign to label him as weird. I keep getting these TikToks of JD Vance, like, looking awkward or all the couch jokes. But this all kind of exists in that larger context of calling them weird. And once you build up that perception, it's easier to fit into a narrative. The same way they built a brat narrative around Kamala, they built a weird narrative around Trump and Vance.
So brat and weird, unlike Chugy or Riz, I mean, these are these words have been around for hundreds of years. So it's interesting to me that they would come to kind of define or help define this particular moment in U.S. political dialogue. What does that tell you, if anything, about the political and cultural force of, like, quote unquote, regular language, but also of memes and online talk?
There's a few things to unpack there for sure. First, the power of words in political branding. We've known this since, like, Lee Atwater delineating, like, how to dog whistle to racist Southerners in the 1970s through, like, coded language, like forced busing or something. So, like, certain words have always had certain, like, a power to them. And Trump has been very good at that by, like, you know, calling people with certain epithets like Crooked Hillary or Sleepy Joe. And now finally the Democrats are, I guess, taking a page out of that book. You also pointed out this sort of contrast with the word chuggy or riz and how these are, like, we would consider them more regular words. And I think that's what makes them more natural, more easily applied. In linguistics, we have this concept of obtrusivity. If a word feels too obtrusive, if it feels too much like it's in your face or not natural, then it's harder for us to actually adopt it. Meanwhile, brat and weird are words that are familiar to us in other contexts, so it makes sense when applied to a new context a lot more than it would be for, like, something like chuggy.
I mean, young people have always been inventing, reinventing words, right?
Totally.
Predating
the
internet,
yeah.
Right? So one that's interested me is that there's this turn of phrase that's been popping up a lot online as when you support someone, it's saying you're pilled, as in your Walz pilled or your Kamala pilled.
Right.
When I was a kid, we used to say things like take a pill, meaning calm down. So I'm so interested in how words, you know, go from nouns to adjectives, so on and so forth. Walk us through the meaning and the origin of this suffix pilled this year.
Yeah. So pilled started with the Matrix. There was the red pill and the blue pill at the time to show you different realities, right? In the early 2000s, incels start presenting, like, kind of a black pill for accepting incel ideology. And that's used kind of coterminously with red pill, meaning accepting Republican ideology. So these two kind of pills popularized the use of the suffix. Once it was kind of clipped off and formed the word black pill, at that point, it made it easier to clip it off and attach it to more words. And at that point, it became what we call a functioning suffix. It was able to be produced in new situations. Through those contexts, pilled now means accepting an ideology in general. So if I really liked eating burritos, and I just recently discovered that, I can say I'm burrito pilled. And we're seeing that with coconut pilled for Kamala or Walz pilled for people who like the new vice presidential candidate.
And you said this comes from incel, like men's
partially,
rights
yeah.
activist type groups. How popular is online lexicon coming from those quarters these days?
Yeah. Internet slang always comes from somewhere else. Like, we think, oh, it's internet slang, but really it comes from some niche community, and then it blows up as a meme, and then we forget where it originally came from. So a lot of internet slang is, for example, African-American English. A lot of the other part of internet slang comes directly from 4chan and from incel groups. So a lot of popular, what we would call now TikTok slang words, the suffix maxing for maximizing or cucked or sigma, these all come from men's rights groups, incel groups. But they spread because they were funny when they were applied outside of those contexts. And now we're sort of largely forgetting those original contexts.
And so should we be worried about people speaking with terms taken from these incel communities? Like, I hear you when you say we've kind of forgotten, but I just wonder, does that concern you that we're taking these words that are used in a certain context by MRA group type groups, and then we're using them in a different context?
Not really. I mean, I think the people who are aware of it started out using these words because they were kind of making fun of how incels talk. I mean, there is the argument that it could make incel ideology more accessible, but I think largely people are parroting these ideas. And when full-on mainstream Democrats are saying coconut pill, they're obviously not referring to incels at all anymore. And as we increasingly dissociate these words from the original incel context, we're actually taking power out of their hands and reclaiming the word for the broader public.
So you mentioned, like, look, and we know this, a lot of our language has come from Black communities, African-American communities. Slay, for example, tea, those are kind of recent ones.
Those are all ballroom slang from the 1980s, yeah. I keep coming back to what we call TikTok slang is either from 4chan or it's from Black culture. Those are pretty much the two main sources of innovators. The ones that aren't, so Chugi wasn't. Chugi seemed to be genuinely a word that somebody came up with, but that one didn't catch on because it didn't feel natural. Now, there's a whole community using it, and then people start applying outside of that community, either because they want to look funny or they want to look cool. That's how these words spread into new contexts when they get attached to memes.
Do you see your work like as an act of translating? Like, you know, I have kids who are Gen Z, Z, and Alpha, and I'm always, as every parent has to their children, said, what does that mean? But do you see your work as sort of like helping different generations communicate with one another instead of being judgy?
I really hope so. What I try to do with my content online is, so I make videos explaining the origins of these words, and I try to do so in as analytical way possible and showing how this is really the same historical patterns that we've been repeating time and time again. Now, when we're borrowing words from niche communities, that's something we've been doing throughout all of history. The word cool, for example, in the 1930s, that was also African-American slang, and then we just ingratiated it into what we would call general American English or Canadian English, and we just forgot about that original origin. So these processes have been happening time and time again. And the way we clip off suffixes, that's nothing new. That's a process called lib fixation. We do it time and time again with, like the gate suffix from Watergate. Now any political scandal can be a gate. That's the same thing. We do these processes over and over again. And so I like to present that, and I hope that people are less scared of these words when I do that.
Fair enough. And thank you for helping us, because it certainly helps me be a better communicator as well. You talked about, you know, the differences in generational speech patterns, at least with the younger generations, are influenced by social media. And therefore, I would suggest algorithms, right? Like on TikTok, you hear words like, like unalive instead of died, or SA instead of sexual assault.
Unalive came from a 2013 Spider-Man meme. It wouldn't have gone viral, wouldn't have become a mainstream word unless TikTok was suppressing the word kill and suicide on TikTok. So now people have to find an alternative, and they went for unalive. And fully, I've done interviews on this with middle school teachers. I've done surveys. 45 to 50% of middle school kids that they know of are using the word unalive genuinely. Like, I've talked to middle school teachers where the kids are submitting essays on Hamlet unaliving himself. And I don't think it's that concerning that algorithms may be shaping our speech, because our mediums always shape our speech. We've always been making euphemisms for death. Like, the word decease was a euphemism for the previous Latin word for death, mors. And the word death itself could have been a euphemism from a previous Proto-Indo-European word.
Yeah, we say passed away.
So, right. Wait, we do that, kick the bucket. Like, all these terms, because we're afraid to talk about death. And, you know, I've also talked to some people who think that their kids are using the word unalive in a way that makes them more comfortable expressing these concepts. And that can be a really good thing. So, while it is a little bit alarming, maybe, that this new nature of censorship could be suppressing language, at the same time, we're always finding ways around censorship. We're always finding ways to do the same linguistic processes we've always been doing.
You have said that one of the most defining features of Gen Z slang is this sort of pessimistic attitude. You know, doom scrolling is a common phrase, bed rotting. What does slang language tell us about the times and of generations?
I think it absolutely speaks to a cultural moment. I think there is a lot of maybe disenfranchisement, disillusionment in younger people that is expressed in our language. Of course, that's not the only attitude we have. We have a lot of like positive sentiments as well. So like there's this meme where Joe Biden shows up and the caption says, "It's so Jover," right? For "it's over." That also comes from incel slang, that kind of phrase, "it's over." But then it's kind of contrasted with the another meme, "We're so Barack." And it's this idea of "we're back." You know, it's a good thing. And so it's we might be a little bit sad, but we're also ready to party. And that's how the younger generation rolls.
Yeah. So I asked you earlier about like, and thanked you for explaining, you know, doing your work to explain it to us older people who somewhat feel sometimes left in the dark. You have this enormous following on social media. The bread and butter of your content is Gen Z linguistics. Why is it important for the kids these days to understand linguistics and where these words come from?
I think the more we know about etymology, the more we know about ourselves, the more we know like these patterns that are happening in language, the better we can be as people. To know that maybe it's not important whether the word pilled comes from incel slang anymore because nobody's using it that way. But it's good to know about the patterns of how ideas diffuse. It's good to know that, for example, other words like slay do come from African-American culture and we've sort of taken it out of their hands in a potentially harmful way. And I'm not saying don't say slay anymore, but it's good to know that these patterns existed so you can be a better person in your day-to-day life.
Okay, I'm not asking you to like have a crystal ball, but do you see things burbling out there that you think will become like the word that we're all saying, I don't know, in a couple months from now?
I just got interviewed for an article on the word slop and how it's kind of emerging to describe generated AI content that kind of like is trashy. I think it seems like a very natural word.
Like poorly made AI content?
Right.
Okay.
Poorly made AI content. If you start looking on social media, you'll see it. It's slop. The word applies pretty well and it feels natural in the same way as like brat or weird because it's a word that we already know.
I'm saying that's slop or it's slop. Is that how I'm using that?
Yeah. You just talk about AI slop. I got another slop video on my feed. Something like that.
Ahead of the times, Adam. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Yeah. A lot of fun talking today.
Adam Aleksic is a linguist and content creator who goes by the Etymology Nerd online. You can find all the stories we bring you each week on the Sunday Magazine over on our website, cbc.ca/Sunday. I'm Pia Chattopadhyay. Thank you for lending us your ear, and we'll talk to you again on Sunday.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.